Welcome back to episode 10 of the Run It Freeways podcast. We've done it. We've survived 10 episodes together, some 689 minutes of mostly running waffle. In this week's episode, we've got a deep dive into Callum's trip down under. We've got a preview of my next marathon out in Osaka. And we've also got Tom, who's been pumping out some serious sessions in the build up to his next 5K race. I don't know about you guys, but I'm seriously excited for this one. How are we doing?
How are we doing, boys? I'm back. Back for another episode. How
back
many have
to
I missed?
The pod.
I think I've missed two episodes, haven't I, now? So this is actually episode 8 for me.
That's true, yeah.
Congrats on 10 episodes, guys. I'm glad you've made it.
It's all right. It's not the same about you, Callum. I will say that much. It's not the same about you.
I've had mixed reviews. I had some people tell me it's world-class without me, and my mum told me that it's better when I'm on it. So there you go.
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Callum, how are you really? Because you sent a picture into the WhatsApp group, a little selfie, and you did look a bit like you were a borderline heroin addict in it.
Yeah, I'm on my last legs, actually. I think heroin would be more enjoyable than this, honestly. I'm just jet lagged, but it just doesn't feel good, you know? I thought I'd smashed it out of the park yesterday, right? So I arrived back on Monday, about midday, and I felt fine. And then at 5 or 6, I thought, you know what? I'm just going to go to bed and I'm sure it'll be fine. It'll get an early night. Anyway, go to sleep. Wake up at midnight, absolutely ready to like run for a brick wall. I was fully awake, but luckily I put myself back to sleep till 7. So in theory, I've had 12 hours sleep. So I don't get how I can possibly still be tired. You know, like I don't understand how that works. So anyway, I'm flagging a little bit now, but hopefully tomorrow I'll be back to normal.
What I love is you giving it the big one this morning. I'd like to direct everybody's attention. Actually, it's going to be gone by the time they see this. But your Strava, where you said, what jet lag at 10:33 this morning. Giving it the big ones. What jet lag? Callum doesn't get jet lag.
Because I had a great run and I couldn't feel a thing. And then honestly, this afternoon, it is just spiraled out of control right now. I might have to move back to Australia and live there. I feel like I'm on the time zone permanently.
How long were you actually out there for?
But barely any time. I only just adjusted to that time zone. I went out on the Sunday, so Sunday the 12th, but we didn't actually get there till the Monday, and then I flew back the same time Sunday and got back Monday. So about 5-6 days out there.
Wow, did
it
seem
long? Is it that?
Did it seem that long? Or
yeah, it felt like I was there ages, honestly. Because kind of you don't have anything to do. I'm sure we'll get into it when we talk about the race, but when you're preparing for the race and you're in a different place, i.e. like you're not at home with where you've got like, you know, errands to run or work to do and stuff like that, you just spend the day doing your training and then just like getting ready for the race. So the days seem pretty long. So I did actually feel like I was out there for quite a while.
And I know absolutely nothing about the area apart from it's called Bathurst. What is that area like? It's not like a big happening city, is it? It's not
no,
like popping
no,
off in Bathurst.
Absolutely nothing going on. honestly, Australian people I spoke to beforehand told me like, yeah, it's a shame you're in the middle of nowhere for it. But it was a nice town. Like it was a nice place. You felt safe when you were walking around, which is good. It was quite a local vibe, you know, everyone knew everyone. The fact that I ended up on the local radio station shows you that, like, you know, literally, if I'm on the radio station, it's clearly not got loads going on, has it? If they're asking me about a cross-country race.
Did you give us a shout out when you were on the radio?
No, I didn't. I barely spoke, to be honest. I think I was there for about an hour and I said about one thing where I was like, oh, yeah, I'm looking forward to the race. the 77-year-old man on the mic was taking up all of the airtime, but... Yeah, I don't think there was anyone listening anyway, to be honest, on that radio station. But yeah, it was good. How have you boys been when I've been away?
Yeah, not too bad. We've been coping, haven't we, Tom? We did an episode last week, which went down all right. Still managed to keep the listeners entertained for an episode without you. But yeah, like Tom said, it's not the same without you. We looking forward to having you back and hearing all about Australia.
I had a funny message actually today from Gavin from OTE, Ben, who said, obviously we've all had some stuff from OTE and they make some of my favourite like running nutrition stuff out there, to be honest. But he said they were over in Spain for a training camp and he was listening to the podcast that we did on his plane home, and they went through some turbulence And he was listening to the part where we were talking in a fair bit of detail about when you have to go for a poo in a bush.
Oh, mid-run.
And he said, he had a split second thought where he realized his last, the last thing that you might listen to is me and you talking about defecating
having a shit in a bush.
In bushes. Yeah, it made me laugh, that did. So shout out to Gavin from
what a lucky bloke.
If he's listening. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's how no one wants to go down that way. That's not a dignified death.
No. No. I'm thinking, Callum, it's obviously had a fairly big race week. Should we just jump straight into Callum, star of the show?
Should we go through the week then,
Yeah,
sounds,
go on.
Sounds good. So yeah.
Take us through your week.
Assume your position back on the Run It Three Ways podcast throne, where you belong.
Yeah, pretty uneventful week, honestly. So
just flew across to the other side of the world and
no biggie.
Ran 2K.
In terms of running, so I flew out on the Sunday, so I arrived there late on Monday night, Australian time. So didn't run when I got there on Monday night. We landed in Sydney, sorry, on Monday night. And then Tuesday morning, we had to fly from Sydney to Bathurst, where the race was and where we were staying, which was like a 30-minute flight. Tiny little plane. There was just us plus two other people. It was like 14 people on the plane. It was pretty... it was actually a fun experience. I thought it was going to be terrifying, but it was actually quite good. So yeah, then I ran Monday afternoon when I got there. So I did 7 miles on the dot at 7:06 pace. This place where we're staying, by the way, hilliest place ever. Like, so hilly. There wasn't flat anywhere. It was just, you know, constantly going up or down. You know, the kangaroos must be pretty strong out there, I'm telling you, because there's some serious elevation. So yeah, that was 7 miles. And even though I've only done about 40 miles in this week, I think it's the highest elevation week I've had probably, you know, in months. So that just shows you. So that
just
was
for context sake, Cambridge is very flat, isn't it? Where you are, there's not too many hills about.
Yeah, Cambridge is so flat. It's like a tread. Like, there's no elevation. So yeah, that was Tuesday, just an easy 7. Then Wednesday, I did a little session. So regular warm up. And I just had 4 by a K and then 3 times 30 seconds. We didn't actually have a track near where we were staying. So I did this round. Not a cricket pitch, but an Aussie rules, like an AFL pitch. So, you know, just a circle essentially on grass, which was pretty good. 302 down to 256. So just keeping it, you know, pretty controlled, knowing that I've got a race and also managing myself in the heat a little bit. I always do a session the week before a race, as you know, we've said previously on the podcast, but I think this was especially important just to experience how the heat was going to feel, even in the warm up, like feeling a little bit more out of breath, a little bit more kind of like having a dry mouth, just to run through in your head what you could expect to feel on the race. So yeah, this was more impressive than it actually looks. It's only a short little session. But actually,
what sort of temperature was it out there when you're doing this session?
So when I did this session, I actually think it was only around 22 or 23 Celsius. But on the day of the race was on the Saturday, and that was 35 Celsius when we raced, which is like, you know, seriously hot, especially for the guys that are doing 2K. But yeah, I'll come on to some of the heat management strategies and stuff later on in the in this week, actually, because it plays a crucial part.
Hang on, Callum. There's two things about this run. The first thing, you did it in Invincibles, didn't you?
Yep. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, not bad going, that. Invincibles on grass, and you're running 256 by the end. And the other thing, which I know you'll be delighted about, which I'm not sure if you've seen, you got the course record for the Bush Rangers Oval clockwise.
Yeah, so that's, I'm glad you brought that up, actually. So I started my session a little bit before everyone else, just because I kind of just get my warm-up out of the way. You know, I'm a bit unprofessional in that sense. Everyone does way more stretches and stuff than me. I just kind of crack on with it a little bit. And I didn't want to do, for some reason, it just seemed right for me to go one way around the circle. And it was the opposite way to what you'd normally go around a track, just because the way that it looked and kind of where we put our bags and everything, I just thought, oh, I'll run that way, that'll be fine. And after I did my first rep, that's when everyone else started. And obviously you can't have people running in both directions, because if you bump into each other the week of a race, whatever, you've got to kind of play it safe. And everyone else wanted to run the other way. So I think actually the reason I've got the course record is because I was the only person
that went clockwise.
To run clockwise, yeah. But there you go. Until then, someone comes along and takes it from me, I am the king of the Bush Rangers. So there you go.
That's pretty
Bush
cool.
Ranger, kind of. Yeah, I like that. It's good. Very
get
good.
A little Strava segment while you're out there.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a nice little session Wednesday, and kind of the only, you know, the only major thing I had to do until the race. So that was good. The next day, Thursday, I just had an easy run in the morning this time. This was 6.82 miles at 7:12s. Again, just keeping it nice and easy. We had quite a big group for all of these runs, which is really good. You know, let the time pass by a bit quicker, just have a bit of a chat. And on this day, actually, is when a lot of the other teams started arriving, because we weren't staying on the actual campus where like the athlete village was. We're staying at a hotel just a little bit down the road, maybe like 1 or 2K away, just because we had arrived a little bit earlier. So us and Kenya were in that hotel. So on this day, we did kind of a few loops around where the athlete village was, which was a university campus, saw some of the other teams arriving, kind of made it feel like you're actually at an event rather than just on holiday. So that was quite a good run, actually.
Just us and Kenya. Every time you say something like that, I'm like, what? I still can't believe you've done this and been out and represented your country and had that experience. Must have been absolutely mad.
No, it's so cool. But like, even just, you know, like people are so laid back with things. And as you can imagine, like because of the culture and just like how they generally are, a lot of the East African athletes will play down their own ability even more than someone like myself would, if you see what I mean. So yeah. Like, because they're surrounded themselves with like everyone where they live is a good runner or wants to be a good runner, or the caliber's so high that, you know, they don't put themselves on a pedestal at all. So we were obviously having all the meals at the same time, all that sort of thing. But every day we'd like have someone else pointed out to us that was insane or was whatever. And I remember we'd finished lunch and gone back, and Zach Mohammed had like posted a thing on his Instagram, and I saw it, and it was a picture of a guy he was sat opposite with that I'd seen in the hotel for the whole week. And he was like sat with former world record, half marathon world record holder, 57 minutes, something, blah, blah, blah. And you know, we had no idea who the guy was, and he's just walking around in his flip flops, getting ready for the race. So it's like, everyone's, you know, like it's all relative is what I'm trying to say. In the same way that you get excited if you see someone you know, it's equally as exciting to be surrounded by people who are just like, yeah, this is normal, like I'm just here for a race, and actually they're like, you know, running for NN or they're doing whatever. So yeah, it was pretty cool experience, I must say.
Speaking of which, in the WhatsApp group on Tuesday, you said just drop the shoulder on Jeffrey Kimura to get the last fried egg.
Yeah, it's a dog eat dog world. You can't respect people on race day, can you?
That is tremendous.
Yeah, so we had a bit of a breakfast buffet, and it was it's just rolling. The chef's, you know, bringing stuff out gradually. And yeah, Jeffrey had his NN gear on for the full week. He was walking around like the dog's bollocks. So I just thought, oh, I'm gonna get in there and get this egg that I fancy. So I you know, slipped him around the bread table, got in there, slung it on my plate, and it was good to go.
It's probably why I ended up coming fourth.
Yeah,
not in the podium.
Psychological warfare. I was in Jeffrey's head from day one.
I appreciate that. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So that was Thursday out the way. Friday was kind of the pre-race. So we went down to, I didn't actually do this run at the course. We went down to the course to have a look at it, walk around, see kind of the obstacles that they'd made, chat to the race directors about, you know, what they were planning on doing with the course, what they thought would happen, the weather, all that kind of thing. But before we actually did that, I did my run. So I did 4.5 miles at 7:06, which includes the strides that I did. So just my usual strides, 4 by 15 seconds, 1 by 30 seconds, and did them on the same grass pitch as the session that I did on Wednesday. And this was pretty interesting, actually, because the day that we went down to the course, there was already some races on because Australia...
event, if you guys saw on Instagram.
But if you could run in a race the day before, it was 6K for men, I think, and 4K for women. If you finished in the top seven, then you got given a golden ticket and you were allowed to come back the next day and race in the actual world championships.
How does that work?
Yeah, so some of the top athletes, basically, if you're hosting a championship, you get to propose to World Athletics like a new thing that you want to do. So I don't know if you saw for Paris Olympics, that the Paris Olympic marathon is also going to be a mass participation event. They're going to let normal people race in the marathon. This was kind of the same thing. So Ed Goddard, for example, a professional runner for Essex, he didn't make the Australia team. So he just came along the day before and raced 6K, finished, I think he finished fourth or fifth. So he got to come back the next day. And you're not racing for Australia and you don't count for the team. You're just racing in this. I think you just got given like a black singlet or something to race in, but you get to do the race.
It was like a blackout Asics kit, I think they had. I think there was like Liam Adams and a few others who were, in the same boat. But I love that idea.
Is Liam Adams the guy that did well in the Commonwealth Marathon?
Yeah.
He's like a postman or something.
Exactly.
Yeah, I remember seeing him. But that was quite good to go on the course, see people running on it and kind of see how the course got affected by having all those people. But yeah, fair play to some of those guys because they finished pretty high up as well. I think Ed Goddard had a pretty good run and so did somebody else based off the fact that they ran on the Friday and then came back to race on the Saturday, which is
that's very impressive. Good. I guess it was just like a little park run for those guys, though. I don't know how deep the fields were, but if they came top five, top six, maybe they were just trying to get round in one piece save it for the big day.
Yeah, you'd imagine so. But this course, as I'll explain when I come onto race day, this course was so tough that even if you're just doing like a tempo or like you're taking it relatively easy for you, it would still batter you. And plus the heat and stuff as well, it's pretty, pretty tough. Mm. This Friday night, chill, do all the team meetings that you do when you go. A really cool thing that British Athletics do, and I experienced this when I went away for the European Championships, is if it's your first junior call-up, you get like a little certificate thing presented to you. And if it's your first senior call-up, you get given like a little memento kind of thing. It's like a glass trophy almost that like has your name and stuff on that you can like, keep forever. So that was really good because we had some people that were and have run for Britain loads of times as under 20s or 23s, but it was their first senior call up. So that's quite a nice thing. I enjoyed that experience the night before the race. Yeah, it's really good. Saturday, the race day, which is pretty crazy. Like I still can't believe I actually race in the World Championships, which obviously the Cross Country Championships isn't as necessarily esteemed in the mainstream as like a World Championships on the track or whatever, but it's still, pretty crazy to have all the countries there and you forget until you're there. And you're walking to find where your team is based that you have, Fiji and this country and that country. And just like, every man and his dog's there. So it's pretty cool. Where this race was on like a, it's basically what Bathurst is famous for is the car racing they have here. So this was at what's called the Mount Panorama Circuit. So literally like a, it's not F1, but imagine like an F1 track. So each country was given like a pit lane where they would like, where they normally keep your car and change your tires, right? So all the garages had like, USA, Kenya, Japan, whoever it's going to be, where you had all your team kit, your physio, like all that kind of thing. So that was pretty good to be sat in there. And we had Japan on one side, USA on the other side, and you've seen all these people. And so it's pretty kind of, you can either get nervous or you can get really excited if you see them.
Yeah, definitely.
Between the two. So yeah, normal warm-up and then a race, which was, again, such a cool experience. In the mixed relay, it's a little bit different to the open races in the sense that you have a few more variables to think about in terms of like you change, you're not just starting at the start line, finishing at the finish line. You've got like a relay changeover. You've got to collect like a little band. You're obviously doing a little bit more waiting around as your teammates are on the course before you're going to run, that kind of thing. I ran the third leg, was kind of with some people, which was good. I think I had like a guy from USA, Moroccan guy, New Zealand guy just behind. So had kind of some people to chase and to run away from, which was good because often in these events you can be a bit isolated, but that was really good. Essentially just got to go off hard and then survive and then try and finish as hard as you can, to be honest. The course was like so twisty and turny. There was like a mud bath section that they made where it was only like 6 or 7 steps, but it was pretty muddy. You went up this massive hill called the Boomerang, which was like an absolute leg smasher. There was a vineyard that you ran through where there was 3 different lanes you could choose that they'd like named after wines, but like obviously everyone just chose the inside line. Anyone that chose the other ones like don't know what they were playing at. which was like pretty.
Oh yeah, I saw that. I wanted to ask you, did you jump over them or did you sort of do a chicane, go around them?
And I don't know if you watched it, but Emma Coburn, who's obviously won the world champs on steeplechase before, she was in the relay on the second leg and she jumped over the first set and then just weaved in out all the others because she must have jumped over it and thought, Jesus Christ, that is hard. Because the camera doesn't show it, but that's really uphill, the tyres.
Right.
So like it killed your momentum a bit, but anyone that had the power in their legs after literally we must have been like 1.8 or 1.9k into the 2k at that point. It was literally just at the finish. So yeah, hell no, was I jumping over those? Like I would have definitely fallen.
That is so random, but I kind of love
When I saw these pictures coming through, I was half expecting there to be like monkey bars and bloody like a little tunnel that you had to crawl through and stuff. It was like
an assault course.
One of those like tough mudder obstacle course type races.
Yeah, well, it's like that's the beauty of cross country. I think like you look at the course for the Euros running through a museum. You look at this like they're trying to make it more of a spectacle. And like if you don't naturally have terrain that is say like muddy or like you know super difficult, then you kind of have to make what you can of it. So, I mean, the World Champs has only ever been in the Southern Hemisphere, I think. Two other times or maybe three other times, so like this is like a pretty big deal for them to have it, so I think they wanted to make the courses as memorable as they could. But I mean if you look at the men's times like in the 10k, I know we'll do it in the results roundup later, but I think they still ran like low 29 minutes or something like that on that course for 10k, and they're not going all out, they're racing each other, so yeah, you could still get a shift on if you wanted to. So yeah, we came sixth as a team, which was great. The others ran fantastically well. We were pretty much like fifth, sixth or seventh for the whole of the race. We were never like right up near the top and we were never, you know, suffering behind. So we're in the thick of it. But yeah, sixth team, and it's the first time GB's ever sent a team to the relay. So it'll take some beating in the future, I think that.
Yeah, that's really good. I'd love to know a little bit more about the runners that are in the team with you. Who were the other three contenders in the relay?
Yeah, so we had in our team we had a really strong team actually. We had Joe Wigfield on the first leg. Joe's had like pretty bad injury history in the last couple of years. He had a couple of stress fractures and stuff, but so he's not kind of like a domestic name that a lot of people have heard of, but a seriously good runner. Came second at the Books Cross Country, or third, I think, at the Books Cross Country recently. And at Valencia 10K ran 28:40, something like that. So pretty sharp runner. He's run 340 for 1500. So we had him on the first leg, which was a great leg because I mean you look at some of the guys he's racing, like Ollie Hall, Sam Tanner, like seriously good 1500 guys, and he was pretty much up there with them. So yeah, great leg.
Good stuff. It's really important to get a good start in the relay, isn't it?
100%. Yeah. You almost want your team back to front in a way, because like you need to stay in touch as long as you can.
Yeah.
Second leg we had Alex Bell, who has come sixth at the Olympics, so that says it all really. 800 meter runner, 157, which is, you know, absolutely rapid. I think the British record's only 155, so that, you know, that shows you how fast she is. And recently won the Armagh 3K as well.
I did see that.
Around 9 minutes on the road, which I think we covered in a previous pod, or you guys might have mentioned that last week, actually.
Yeah.
So she's actually staying out in Australia. She's got a race on Thursday, over 3K in Melbourne, so it'll be interesting to see what she can do there.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
But yeah, Alex is a great runner. She was the captain as well for the whole of British Athletics this week. So, you know, it was great to have her there. And then on the fourth leg, we had Alex Millard, who is also at Loughborough. She just won the Books Cross Country for 10K. So her and Joe both, you know, really good over the longer distances. And Alex recently signed with New Balance as well. So she's... and she won bronze at European Under 23. So there you go. So yeah, we had an insane team. I was like so excited to be there from the start, knowing that like, we actually had a chance in the race, if you see what I mean. I wasn't just going to like make up the numbers and all be good. No. You flew there knowing that like as nice as everyone is and we're all like, we all get along and we're all relaxed for the whole week. You know that you're with people that really can turn it on when they race. And when it comes to racing, like they've not got to this point by like messing around or just being there to turn up. Like they've come here to really race well and they've proven that actually they'll go toe to toe with anyone. So we didn't go in with the expectation of like, oh, you know, Kenya are really good. They're probably going to beat us because you're with Alex, who's gone to the Olympics and has beaten Kenyans, Ugandans, Ethiopians, whatever, and come sixth in the Olympics. So it gives you the hope of being like, well, bloody Alex went and did it. Like, why can't we do it? You know? So
yeah,
it was actually super motivational to like be in a team like that. So couldn't have asked for a better team, to be honest. It was really good. And like I said, if a British team goes and does better than sixth, I'll be, you know, really impressed because that was a strong performance, I think, from us.
Yeah, really good.
Good on you, Callum. We're very proud of you. You know,
yeah,
flying the flag for the podcast and doing your bit. Like you say, you weren't there just to make up numbers. You put in a solid leg as well, really, didn't you, across the board?
No, I was pleased. I mean, like, I was on the same leg as Stu McSwain, and honestly, it was like, I don't know if you guys have seen Happy Gilmore, the golf film, but there's a scene in Happy Gilmore where I think it's at the point where he's won all the fans over, and he's still putting with his little ice hockey stick, right? And there's a scene where they all start chanting his name, and on the third leg, right, the women on leg two had just run past us, so they were about to come to the bat and exchange. So we all got called to go out, and I'm on the same leg as McSwain, and this one kid, right, starts going, Stewie, Stewie. And in an instant, right, everyone, and when I say everyone, like, this is probably the most surreal moment of my life, everyone's going, Stewie, Stewie, like, just really, really chatting his name. And it was like goosebump stuff. It was like, bloody hell, like, he's obviously one of the most recognisable runners in all of Australia. And, you know, to get for him to get it run off, and then me to get it however many, you know, seconds later. Atmosphere was so good. And I only ran, I think, 12 seconds slower than him over 2K. So, you know, he's run 13.0 whatever for 5K, and he's run 3.29 for 1500. So I think to be 12 seconds behind over 2K is, it means that
pretty good going.
It means I did put a good run. You know, it's good to have some context of how I ran, you know.
And you touched on the atmosphere a little bit there, but obviously, like, I wonder if we've got a warped perception on it just because of, I feel like I know a disproportionate amount about the Australian running scene because of the amount of podcasts and because of how good they are at telling those stories through the podcast and stuff. But what was the atmosphere like with, you know, feet on the ground? Like, there's Insight Running and For the Kudos and all these lot were hyping it up to be.
The atmosphere was way better than I thought it would be. When we went the day before and looked at the course and how it was, I thought, I don't know about this. Like, how many people are really going to come? We're in a really small place. Like, you know, I can't imagine, like, you have to fly if you want to come from, you know, a lot of the big cities, or if you want to come from Melbourne, you've got to drive, you know, 3.5 hours or whatever it is. Sydney, sorry. So I thought, I'm not sure, but honestly, on race day, when I turned up, I was like, wow, like, this is so good. I just used golf as a kind of example in the movie, but when you go and see golf, or you watch it on TV, and you see when people are sort of five or six deep at the greens to watch someone put a hole, it was very much like that at certain areas of the course, because a lot of it was a bit inaccessible. The areas where you could watch and you'd see people, you know, over multiple laps, they were really busy and kind of, you know, there was a good level of noise, and the amount of kids and stuff that were there who were coming to get photos or were wanting to engage with the athletes and stuff, it fills you with a lot of confidence of, like, what athletics could be like, if you see what I mean, if people if the people in charge give the opportunity a little bit more for a bit more storytelling, a bit more fan engagement, because, you know, like it or not, Australia knew their best chance of getting anything out of it was that mixed relay team. They'd put together, you know, four of the best distance runners in Australian history in terms of middle distance. They probably got the two fastest guys they've ever had, Australian record holder, and I think the second fastest time. Like, they had pinned their hopes on that. But what they did a really good job of is telling that story through social media really early on, and kind of telling everyone, look, this is a world champs in Australia. This ain't going to happen again for a very long time. And if it does happen, we'll be lucky if we've got a team half as good as this. So if you want to see Australia win a medal, then, you know, get down to Bathurst, because this is where it's going to go down. And the athletes delivered. They got the bronze, and it just set off the day with such a good atmosphere, because we were the first race. So I think from then onwards, everyone kind of felt like, wow, Australia are in these races. Like, we can really do something, even though, obviously, in, like, you know, the open races, that they, you know, they can't compete against the East Africans, etc. But yeah, such a good event, and, you know, credit to all the people that did actually, you know, drive a long way or even fly to do so, because I think in Europe we take that for granted, how easy that is to pop over to France to watch a race or something, because, you know, you're only going an hour out of your way, compared to people having to come across the bloody outback or whatever to get there. So yeah, it was class, honestly, lads. I don't think I'm doing it justice how I'm talking about it, but no, seriously, good event.
No, I think you've done a great job. Like, it's really exciting to hear, to be honest. Obviously, not having much of an idea of what it was like, to hear your first-hand account of it is Yeah, it's got me going a little bit. My arms went a bit tingly when you were talking about the Stewie chant. And just I'm a sucker for things like the World Cup where people get behind their countries and, you know, really give it the big one. And to see that in running with Australia and that atmosphere when they got bronze, like you say, yeah, must have just been a really special thing to be part of. And it's fun for the grandkids, that, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, the tough conditions often add to events like that. You often find that when it sounds bad, but when people are suffering a little bit, it arguably engages the fans a little bit more. And everyone that was there that day could recognize how bad that course was in terms of how difficult it was and what the genuine, like,
this sounds off too fast on that course.
There was a very big likelihood that you would be in trouble in terms of you either really going to badly blow up or like it was definitely a risk. So
in that main pack,
I think the fans really thought like, bloody hell, like, you know, they're going for it here. They could really mess them up. Like they're being brave almost and really got behind them. So
interesting to listen to inside really
the other Australian podcasts and see what their kind of domestic point of view is, because they will have experienced Australian crowds before and they'll be able to kind of tell you whether, you know, that's a common thing or whether it did have a unique atmosphere. Because for me, you know, whatever happened, it was going to be a world championship that I was running in. So I was going to embrace it for what it was, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Before we move on to our weeks, I was just wondering, Callum, have you seen any like good like YouTube videos or where can people go and watch like the cross-country race that you were part of? And like, where can we catch up on that if we haven't seen that yet?
Yeah, so they're all uploaded now to World Athletics on YouTube. Because of the broadcasting rights in the UK and certain other countries, the live stream was not actually allowed because you couldn't broadcast it live. Mm. But as far as I'm aware, on World Athletics, they now have the replays for all the events and different stuff like that. So if you actually want to watch the race, then go ahead and watch it there. But no doubt there'll be people that bring out some kind of, you know, not behind the scenes, but like first-hand videos, if you will, which will also give a unique insight, I'm sure.
Because I think that was the only thing that was missing over here in the UK, because obviously it was so far away. We didn't really get to see much of it. Obviously, we woke up in the morning and heard like all these amazing things that had gone on. But because we couldn't actually watch it or listen to it live, that was the only thing that made it a little bit harder to sort of engage with as a UK fan, if you like. But yeah, I'd love to watch some like behind the scenes videos, watch the actual races themselves, because obviously we've seen the results and seen the clips of like Gide falling over with 100 meters to go, but the majority of it we haven't really seen a huge amount on across like social media and stuff in the UK. So yeah, definitely worth having a little look at some videos of the race. Definitely we'll be doing that after this.
It's a hard sport to be a fan of, isn't it, when you think you've got like the world championships, like a pinnacle. Like you say, Callum, it's cross-country, so it's not necessarily the same as Olympics or World Champs or anything like that. But it's still a massive deal in running. And to think of, you know, us lot on here and probably most people listening to this being keen fans of running and how difficult it is to just bloody watch the World Championships of cross-country, it's that's the only thing that
tastes
in the mouth, doesn't it?
Yeah, the only thing I would say is like, it was available on iPlayer to watch. So in terms of like, I think the time difference is the killer, right? Because when Jake Whiteman won his world medal, the time difference was still pretty crazy, wasn't it? It was like, you know, I'm pretty sure there was still some pretty tasty time difference.
Yeah.
But I think because it's on the track and it sounds stupid, but on a track you can fit it all into one camera shot, if you get what I mean. Like you can see it, you can see an Instagram reel the next day and pretty much the highlights of the whole race will be there, or you see like the final home straight and it doesn't take a lot to build up a snapshot of what the race was like. Whereas 10K on totally different terrain, it's hard to fit it all into one thing that a lot of people can comprehend, if you see what I mean. So you can just turn something on, you see Whiteman's past Ingebrigtsen. It doesn't matter that you didn't get up and watch it because of the time difference. Whereas I feel like with cross country, you have to be kind of invested in the race to see what happened throughout the whole of it. You know, who was in the lead, who caught up, who blew up, who did whatever. Someone crossing the finish line doesn't really have the same spine tingling. Like,
yeah, that is very true.
So I think often we can see it as like, oh, it's so much harder to follow. But, you know, it technically was it. Not really. It was just bloody annoying time difference.
Mm. Definitely. One final question. What was the most like unbelievable story from the trip? Like something that you just couldn't get over? Is there anything that comes to mind?
I don't know, honestly. Like one thing that, and I've wrote an Instagram post about this the other day, is like one thing that I really wanted to do when I was there is like allow myself to actually think, not in an arrogant way, but allow myself to actually think, oh, you deserve to be here. Do you get what I mean? Because too often I like tell myself like, oh, because I'm a fan of athletics and I find stuff unbelievable that I'm around certain names, I convince myself that I'm there as almost like a little special treat or I'm never going to do it again. Whereas actually I need to be way more ruthless and be like, no, I trained to get here. I did really well. I want to do this again. So therefore start acting like you belong here. Do you get what I mean? So
yeah, 100%.
I tried to treat things more normal, but when I come back and I'm saying like, oh, I did this with blah, blah, blah. So like I'm looking at the photos through my phone and I've got a video of Stuart McSwain losing an arm wrestle, you know? And I'm thinking to myself, like, if you told Callum 6 months ago or a year ago, that's what you'd have on your phone, like, he'd say, no way, that's the coolest thing ever. Like, how funny is that? Or you were chatting to this person at the bar, or, you know, you saw bloody Solomon Berega, Olympic 5K champion, having a beer at the bar. What?
Slamming like, Jager bombs.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, so there was, of course, loads of unbelievable stuff. And when I, like, actually sit back and think, like, how cool was, you know, getting up every day and you've got Jeffrey Camora having breakfast next to you and stuff, like all of that stuff is really unique and cool. But yeah. I'm trying to like embrace it and not just taking part, kind of be like, no, these are people that you want to race against. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. That's good mentality to take away from it.
Kind of a weird one. I'm trying to not be as starstruck that about it. You see what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
Bloody hell. Yeah. Ben, which one of us is gonna follow that?
It's difficult, isn't it? I'll give it a go if you like.
Yeah, go on.
Go through my week. So I wasn't out in Australia. I was just in lovely, sunny Hattie P for my week. Where did we start? All the way down here. Monday for me was an easy run, 14 kilometers. I actually ended up running a little bit quicker than my usual easy run pace, but it was actually after my 10K race last week. And I'm not going to lie, I woke up feeling a little bit sort of disappointed. You know, when you don't have a great result, you can wake up with a bit of like angst in your step. So hence my easy run was 4:11 pace rather than my usual sort of 4:30s per K. But yeah, good start to the week, 14K in the sunshine. The weather's definitely taken a good turn for the better recently, which makes training a lot easier to get out for in the morning. And then on Monday evening, did a bit of strength training and a little second run, 4K on the treadmill after the strength training, just to sort of shake out any nasties that built up in the session. And then on to Tuesday. So this was my last double threshold day of my training block in the build up to Osaka, which at this point was probably about 11-12 days out. So the morning threshold was 3 by 10 minutes, classic one for me, off 60 seconds recovery, and reps were actually pretty good in terms of speed on this day. Average 3:08 for the first 10 minutes, then 3:12 and 3:12 for the last one. Got written here, legs were quite heavy. I think the race at the weekend had caught up with me. Even though the race didn't necessarily go as well as I wanted to, there was still like quite a solid effort there, because obviously in peak marathon training, your legs are always going to be tired. So that additional race definitely helped finish the legs off. So I was feeling quite heavy, but pleased with the paces. And I ended this one at my local cafe, actually. Went down, had a bit of breakfast.
Did you have?
I had a full English.
That, Ben.
I did. Very I just great. Went for it. Got home to the house, ready oh, to
I,
sort of...
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
I'm just looking at the picture. Is that toast or is that just bread with butter on it?
It was just bread with butter on it.
That's weird.
It was a bit weird. I only ended up eating one of those pieces of bread and left the other one. So
yeah, they look anemic, mate.
I wasn't a fan, but a solid session, solid breakfast.
Yeah, not surprised people when they see our food think it looks awful, because that objectively, like, I know there's sentimental value attached to a full English for us, but looking at that is filth, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't look great.
No.
Yeah, but good on you, mate. Calories out, calories in. I respect
exactly.
That.
Well, I had another session in the evening, so I was like, I'm going to treat myself to a solid breakfast. So this was threshold session number two. Probably a little bit faster than threshold, even though heart rate said I was in the right zone. So I'm pretty chuffed with that. The session was 6 by 1 mile with 60 seconds standing recoveries. This one was down on the treadmill. And I had the treadmill whacked up to full volume for this one, full speed. So 5 minutes for the mile, 306 per K. And for this session, I really wanted to dial in the fueling for the marathon. So I actually wanted to basically take twice as much carbohydrates than I actually needed for the amount of time that I was running. So I ended up having...
I'm glad you got some in, mate, because it didn't seem like you had a lot for your breakfast. So
exactly, yeah. I was obviously pretty low when it came to the second session. So I just absolutely went for it and took gels almost. I think I took about 3 gels across the course of this session, a gel before, just to really stress the stomach as a bit of a training session to hopefully get it ready for Osaka, when obviously I'll be fueling and need to have a strong stomach for the day. This was actually some advice from a sports nutritionist that I spoke with from the guys at Precision Hydration that have supplied me with all my fuel in for this one. So yeah, shout out to those guys. Not a sponsored post, but they've given me some stuff to try and it's been really, really good. I've previously used Morton, which has been okay. I've had a few stomach issues, so I decided to test things out a little bit more across this block and found Precision Hydration. And it's a really good consistency. The gels sort of between Morton, which are really thick and consist like almost jelly-like, and like Assist, Science in Sport, are really runny. It's sort of in between. And I just find that they're easy to take on. They sit well in my stomach. So yeah, the purpose of that session was just to really practice the fueling. And I pushed the pace a little bit, probably more so than I would in a normal threshold session, just so got the benefit from that last big double day of training before the taper really kicked in. Moving on to my Wednesday, just a 30 minutes recovery, 6.43 kilometers at 440 per kilometer pace. Made sure kept this one nice and easy. On to Thursday, again another easy run, just 10 kilometers. So you can already see with these easy days, my overall volume is starting to come down. So across Wednesday and Thursday, I only ran 10 miles, which for me is relatively low. And then on to I've called this one the last dance. It was my final session, big session, marathon session before flying out to Osaka, which I'm just about to do when we're recording this podcast. I'm flying out on Thursday. So yeah, this was a really good workout. Had it in the plan and I decided to break it down a little bit. So it's 15 by a kilometer with 60 seconds rest. So quite a lot of volume to do. I think it was 9 days out from the marathon, but I've done sessions of this volume before and felt really good like 5 or 6 days later, so I'm not too worried about it being a big one. I know it looks like it on Strava and some people might think it's a bit too much to be cramming in before, but anyway, the session was 15 by a K. First 5 reps I wanted to hit around 320 per kilometer, which is roughly around marathon pace, probably a little bit faster than marathon pace. Then the second set of 5 were at 315s, and then the last 5 were at 310s. And for the workout, I averaged 313 per kilometer, and it felt really good, to be honest. There was quite a strong headwind down on the little strip that I chose to do this one on. So the first and third reps were like really quite comfortable, but the second rep into the headwind on the way back was quite difficult, but it actually made the session go fairly quickly, I think, because I was always thinking, right, the next rep will be either easy or it'll be hard. So there was sort of a varied amount of effort level between the reps. And yeah, almost overall, like solid session.
When you do one like that, when you've got like a solid bit of tailwind behind you, like yeah, it's almost like mentally it feels like a recovery after the hard rep before it. So yeah
definitely.
I mean there.
Yeah, definitely would advise that session if anyone's looking to do a marathon. It's probably my favorite session of the block, especially breaking it down into going through the gears a little bit. So starting off at marathon pace and working more towards 10K pace towards the end was, yeah, really good workout. Big confidence booster with 9 days to go. Moving on.
What's going to be... I was going to ask you a question, but we'll cover it later in the what's coming up next week section. Go ahead.
Yeah, no worries. So on to Saturday. Did my local park run, bit of a steady effort. I ran 3:38 per kilometer. One of my teammates, Seb from Chelmsford, was actually down at this park run. He's coming back from injury, and he can run a 5K in around low 15s. But at the moment, he's running around 18:30. So yeah, he's had a long period of injury. So he's coming back. So it was nice to share the start line with him again. I know it's only down at a local park run, so I ran the majority of that with him, and then obviously showed him who's boss with the last K and just dropped him. Yeah, just to take the win, you know, win at park run. Yeah. Got to get the confidence up for Osaka.
Kick a man whilst he's down, eh? Poor step.
Exactly, yeah.
And then you just spank him on the last K of a park run.
Yeah, and when the results came in, I made sure I took a screenshot and whacked it in the Chelmsford AC chat. And yeah, got my bragging rights for the weekend.
Tough love.
Yeah, he'll be back. He's a good lad as well, Seb. He can take a bit of banter. So that was my Saturday. And then finally, my long run for the week was 10 miles. Ticked along at a nice 4 minutes per kilometre. And it felt really good. What shoes did I wear for this? I wore the Saucony Endorphin Pro 3s, which I haven't worn in a long time, actually. In my previous marathon block, I had a little bit of niggle after a session in the shoe. So I thought of putting them on the back burner. But I thought, why not try a different shoe week before the marathon? That seems sensible. but they felt really good. 16.2 kilometers at 4 minutes per kilometer pace. And that was my week, 114 kilometers of running. So coming down from 160 3 weeks before, then 114 and 114 for this week. And yeah, everything's looking good ahead of Osaka, which is in less than a week.
And the question I was going to ask is, have you finalized a pace you're going to go out at, a kind of target time? I know you've given like a bit of a rough estimate, but in terms of what your plan looks like, have you, over the last few weeks, dialed into, okay, this is what I would like to run, or I think I can run, or are you still leaving that for another week or so?
Yeah, it's difficult really, because obviously this block has only been, well, 8 weeks in duration, which is not really, well, definitely isn't enough for a marathon in hindsight. So it's hard to sort of tell where my fitness is at over the sort of 42 kilometers. But in training, sort of 3:25 per kilometer is sort of feeling like marathon effort at the moment. So I think I'm gonna aim for around, I'm gonna start off at maybe 3:28 for the first 5K, and then try and bring it down a little bit. I'm certainly not gonna go into it with my usual sort of full send attitude, because obviously my training hasn't quite been up to where I usually would push for before a marathon. So yeah, if I can come away from Osaka with a PB, which is my PB is currently 2:28, so anything quicker than that I'll be happy with. But I'm aiming for 2:25 if I had to put a time on it, but I'm just going to see how it goes on the day, settle into what I think is marathon pace rather than having a set pace that I've got to run each kilometer at, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I just think it's nice to know, like, in general I think it's good to have conversations before like a race, but specifically because we're on a podcast and you obviously make content around running, people to know in advance what your intentions are. So therefore, if you race and you go out at 3:38 or you go out at 3:18, people will know whether you've gone slower or faster than you planned.
Yeah.
You see what
I mean? 100%.
I think context, it helps a lot. Yeah. Helps a lot with like the storytelling of how the race goes. And also, I was interested. So yeah, thanks a lot.
No worries. But yeah, that's my week. What about you, Tom? How's your week been?
The only thing I had a good week actually. But the last thing I'll ask you, how are you dealing mentally with the taper? Because I know I hated it for London. It wasn't even an aggressive taper, but just getting in my own head about it, and I don't know, just the waiting, that sort of limbo type sensation. How are you dealing with it mentally?
Yeah, well, for my last two marathons, I haven't really enjoyed the taper too much, just because you're coming off high volume and often your legs will actually start to feel worse before they feel better. I don't know why that just sometimes happens, and you almost feel even more lethargic on your easy runs. And obviously mentally cutting a big chunk of running out of your week means you've got a lot of free time to think things over. But for this time round, I've actually been really enjoying the taper, to be honest with you. I think because I only hit sort of peak mileage for literally 1 or 2 weeks in this block, I've sort of come off that training and started to feel fresh, like almost straight away, like to the point where I did a run today, which is on a Tuesday. We've recorded this podcast a little bit late just so we could get Callum back on the airways, but my legs are already starting to feel really good. So yeah, big confidence going into Osaka that I'm feeling fit, healthy, niggle free, legs are feeling good already. So yeah, hopefully just tick things over the next 3 or 4 days and get to the start line in pretty good shape. If I can PB in Osaka, I'll be over the moon because of basically where I started 8 weeks ago was probably quite a low point in terms of fitness. I'd say in the last year, maybe even 2 years, because of coming off the end of racing in Valencia. Then I had like 6 week period of colds and illness where I was only running around 30, 40 kilometers a week. So to get myself in reasonable shape in 8 weeks, I've actually quite enjoyed this short block, and I'm excited to see how it goes. Could either go two ways, really. Could go get to 30K and pace starts to slow down because I haven't quite had the amount of volume, or I could get to 30K and because the volume hasn't been as high as it previously was across other training blocks, it could still be fresh. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see, and only time will tell, I guess.
Yeah, I love that. I think you're definitely in good shape. You're not in, you know, you haven't strung together multiple 100-mile weeks back to back to back like you had done before. But honestly, I think that might work in your favour.
Yeah, you never
just
know.
In terms of like freshness and whatnot. So yeah, I'm incredibly excited for you.
Yeah,
next week.
It's good in a way, and I'm pleased because I think it's going to show you, regardless of how the marathon goes, that, and it's when I say show you, also show people that are listening and people that are getting into running, is often we're tricked into the idea that you need a perfect formulaic structure. You need to have session on this day, you know, rest on this day, always have a long run on the week. And then you have to either do it for, the only options are 8, 12 or 16 weeks for blocks. Like, God forbid you did one that's not in those, like you're going to fall to bits kind of thing. So I think it's good for you to actually show, look, I had all these things in my life that got in the way, or that were unavoidable, or that, you know, I couldn't miss an opportunity, so I had to do something. And look, my world has not fallen apart. I've still done well. So I think it's actually a blessing in disguise, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely. And I can't wait to go out to Japan. It's going to be such an experience. Like, to be honest with you, I couldn't really give a monkey's what the time is on the clock when I cross the line, but just crossing the line will be incredible. Like, in a new continent that I've never even been to before. So yeah, I'm just going to soak up the experience. I'm going to use the first at least 5K of the race to just really enjoy it, get the camera out, film some content, not absolutely gun it from the start like I did in Valencia, and just ease into it a little bit. And then hopefully towards the end, if I'm still feeling good, I can start really cranking it to try and get under that 2:28. But it's going to be a really fun trip. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm all warm and tingly inside. There's lots of exciting things going on, aren't there?
Is indeed.
Yeah. Amazing. Right. I'll whip through my week then, and then we can get on to some running news. So I actually had a pretty awful start to the week because I was woken up at 6:55 by an IKEA delivery driver, literally like trying to break my door down. It was unbelievably loud. So I've not been home that much the last few weeks. It's just been mental with work. And so I've not really spent that much time in my new place. But on the Sunday afternoon, I went a bit mental on IKEA. And ordered essentially all of the things that I didn't have, and they arrived like immediately the next morning. So that wasn't particularly pleasant, but it did mean I was up and about and awake, ready to run early, because this was my first double day for ages, for months and months and months. And I don't know about you boys, but I love doubles. I would run doubles every day of the week if Andy would let me. There's just something about running twice. It just gets me going.
That's very odd.
Is it really? Do you not like them? If you've got a double day, are you like? Oh.
A double day guy. I love a double day.
I don't mind a double day, but I wouldn't say it gets me like, oh, I'm so excited. I wish I could run twice every day.
But imagine if you hadn't done a double day for like, I don't know, 10 weeks, like Tom. Yeah. When I
10
read
weeks, more like flipping 20 weeks.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, it's been ages, absolutely ages.
Did put a smile to my face when I saw you do a second run. So
it was good.
Happy for you.
Very good. And so this was off the back of a fairly tasty long run as well. But Andy wanted me to do steady 5 in the morning and then steady 5 in the afternoon. So 8K, 3:52 average, which actually felt a lot better than I expected, which was nice. And then just took it nice and easy in the afternoon. So at lunchtime, I got out again for 5 miles or just over 8K at 4:41 pace, plus 4x100 meter strides, so standard stuff. And then Tuesday was first session of the week, and it was quite a tasty one. So I had, it's a bit of a mouthful, but 2K, 1200, 800, 2K, 5x400. So I think this is to emulate what 4x2K would feel like. But at the moment, whilst I'm not necessarily fit enough to handle 4x2K at the paces that Andy would want me to run 4x2K, he's just broken it down a little bit with the 1200, 800 and 5x4. So I was not nervous about this one, but the paces were a little bit hotter than they had been in training for a little while. And so I knew I could hit them, but it's one of those where you go into it thinking, I've got to sort of feel good on this day to hit the prescribed splits. So for the first 2K rep, I went 6:51, 3:23 average. The 1200 was 3:19 per K average. The 800 was in 2:36, which is 3:14. The second 2K block, full 2K block, was in 6:33. So I got going quite nicely on this one. 3:16 average for that. And then the 400s, for some reason, I dropped a 68 in there. That was stupid. Boom. But other than that, it was, I went 73, 68, 74, 76, and 70. And I lapped my watch quite late on the 76. So it was probably give or take a couple of seconds there. So for me, that's pretty solid. Like it's a world above what I was doing. Sorry, listeners, for the abrupt cut there. I think the local phone lines have fallen down because I totally lost signal. So I've had to connect to Wi-Fi. Anyway, this session then was a very good one. I put in my Strava notes that I definitely buried myself on a couple of the 400s, mainly that 68, which was weird. I don't really know where that came from, and it wasn't advised. But aside from that, it was a nice little step up, nice little confidence boost, and a good sign that things are moving in the right direction. And I think I'm just getting more confident, to be honest, running at sort of low 320s and sub 320 pace, which has been severely lacking for a long time. So was happy with that. All up, it came to just over 10.5K, 3:45 average for the old session, and then just jogged back home after that, couple K. So that was
solid stuff.
That was Tuesday.
I wanted to ask you, with that 68-400, like how did that happen? Because the others were like, did you say one was 76?
That one I lapped my watch a bit late, so it was like
maybe like 74.
420.
That's a lot quicker.
Was the 68 your first rep?
It was, yeah.
That's exactly right. Why then, because I think when you've been running like your 1200s and your 800s, in your brain, I don't know if you're the same as me, but unless I'm on the track where I can actually see the first 100 split, you think to yourself, oh, wow, I need to go faster here. Like, this is a 400.
Exactly.
And you get so carried away with yourself. And when you've been feeling good, I'm guessing you've not gone, okay, better like rein it back after 200. You just fly through it.
Yeah, that was exactly it. I knew from like the first few steps I was out too hard. But by that point, like you say, I was rolling with it and I was too deep in the rep. It feels weird almost when you put the brakes on in a 400. So, just rolled with it and it was what it was. But probably 73-ish average for those 400s, which, nice.
At least you were sensible and didn't carry on at that pace, because that probably would have wrecked you. But
no.
Yeah, good session, that.
I enjoyed it very much. It just breaks it up a little bit. 4x2K would feel like a slog, but just having it a little bit mixed and matched with the 800 and the 400s in there, good way to do it. So, yeah, you've got Andy Hobdell to thank for that one, if you fancy stealing it. So, what are we on? Wednesday. Easy hour, just under 13K, 4:39 average. And it was an absolutely beautiful morning. Like you say, Ben, the weather has definitely turned a bit of a corner here in the UK. It's just a bit more pleasant, like it's a bit warmer. And I think it was still pretty cold this morning, actually, but it was just a really, really lovely run. Watched the sunrise on top of a hill.
Beautiful.
Enjoyed that. Quite a nice undulating loop, this one. Looks a bit like a witch on a broomstick, I think, this loop, if you've got it up on Strava. But yeah,
the
only negative thing about this run is the fact that the Nimbus 25 from Asics is still giving me jip.
Oh, no.
So this was my third run in it, and I've changed socks every time, thinner sock, thicker sock, and I'm still getting the same. It just makes my feet really hot, the Nimbus 25, which is a shame because it feels so nice underfoot. Like, I think it's a lovely shoe. And if you don't find it too hot, I think it's fantastic. Like, one of the best daily mileage shoes out there. But I'm just, I don't really want to run in it that much because of that issue. So, yeah, bit of a shame, but we move on.
You know what else is, you know what else is brutal about this 60 minutes?
What's that then?
You've done 7.99 miles. Couldn't make it.
And he's 10 seconds short as well. 59.50.
I'll tell you what, right? My Polar watch is, yeah, it chucks some tacks on.
Oh, do you know what you need? You should get, Ben. You should get Coros Pace 2.
I definitely should.
I've got a spare one now.
Hashtag ad.
Yeah, if anyone from Coros is listening to this and wants to sponsor the pod, send us a watch, please. But to be fair, that's not fair because the Polar, I like it. I really like it for basically everything else. Like, the sleep tracking mode is wonderful on it. It doesn't give me any issues any other time. But for some reason, if I run 60 minutes, I'll even stop my runs at like an hour and 10 seconds just to make sure. And then I'll go to Strava at 59.50.
I wouldn't be having that. I'd have that in the bin straight away. All that mileage you're missing out. 10 seconds every run.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, it's a bit of a joke.
It's hundreds of miles a year. I'm joking.
But yeah, that was Wednesday. And then Thursday, I had the day off work. So I got out at a very leisurely 10:47 in the morning. Sort of time you go for a run that, Ben.
Yes, indeed. It says here 11. 11 o'clock.
I get used to it. My little jog down to the canal was 10:47.
I see.
Because I live on top of a hill, right? If starting runs, unless it's an easy run where it doesn't really matter, if I'm starting a run at any kind of prescribed pace, it's either straight downhill to get to like the canal and through town, or straight uphill to get onto some country lane loops. So it's a lot easier just to shuffle down the hill and start from a nice flat neutral ground. So yeah, that's what I did, 1500 meters or so down to the canal. And then this was a 45 minute progression, which I kind of took for granted a little bit in my head and didn't put much attention on. I was focused on the session on Tuesday and I thought this would just be like a fairly comfortable, steady effort. But the progression was in blocks of 15 minutes and it was prescribed to start at 4 minute Ks. And then the second block was meant to be 3:45s and the third block being 3:30 per K. So nice and steady, but I'm going to slate the watch again here. It went a bit funny down the canal and GPS is a bit weird down the canal anyway, but I've never really had any issues with it until this very specific run where I knew I wasn't running as slow as it was saying I was running, but it was sort of just stuck on like 4:15 for the whole thing. And I didn't run a single K. Well, I ran 1K, which was over 4 minutes. So I knew it wasn't accurate, but it just made the whole gauging pace really quite challenging. So in the end, I think my splits aren't actually loading on here. Oh yeah, there we go. So for the first 15 minutes, I averaged 3:55 per K. The second 15 minutes was 3:41. And then the third 15 minutes was 3:28 per K. And if the last activity annoyed you with it cutting seconds, this was 14:58, 14:58 and 14:57, apparently.
That's well annoying.
15 minutes, which, yeah, it's driving me a bit mental, to be honest.
First world problems.
Yeah, exactly. But this got really hard towards the end. And at the time, because I had no idea what pace I was actually running, I didn't really know why. And I was thinking, have I like pushed this too hard or am I just tired? Or and then when I got back, the last couple of K were at pretty much 10K pace, like low 3:20s, which, yeah, it's probably going to hurt at the end of a 45-minute progression down a muddy canal. So that sort of solved that mystery for me. And then, yeah, shuffled a couple of K to the co-op. I can't remember what I got from the co-op, actually. What did I get?
Where's the photos? We need a photo of what you brought from the co-op next time.
All right, fine.
With a caption like that, we need to see what's in the basket.
I'll start doing that. Don't you worry. And then Friday, this was an interesting run as well. I actually had company on this run from Alice, who lovely company to tell you the truth. And
Callum's at a half is down. Little run.
Yeah, she popped down. She popped over whilst he was down under. She came for an easy run with me. No, it's not Callum's Alice. Don't worry. Don't worry. I don't want any controversy.
He has gone a bit quiet, to be fair.
she, She'd drop you on a run, Tom.
I got dropped on this one. Bloody hell.
That's how I know it's not her.
Yeah, well, this was meant to be just 45 minutes steady. And Andy, did he comment on Strava or did he send me a message? Yeah, he sent me a message on WhatsApp saying a very sensible run today, because I think he knows I've got my mojo back and I'm sort of spanking runs maybe a little bit quicker than I should or I could if I was being sensible.
Yeah.
But it's a nice undulating loop, so it keeps you honest. And all up, it was, what am I doing this week? 10.95 kilometers, 4:22 average. So I need to sort myself out with these runs, don't I? At least it shows that I'm not one of them people who jogs backwards and forwards up and down the road just to get to 11K. So it's a round number. I don't give a bollocks about that, as you can see from this week.
Fair enough. Glad we got that ironed out.
Yeah. And then Saturday was going to be a rest day, but I was picking up Summer from a parent's house at about 10, and it's about a 25-minute walk from where I live to where my parents live. And I thought I could walk, or I could use those 25 minutes to get a little shake out in, which was far more preferable, to be honest. So got out for just 5K, really easy, 4:42, and enjoyed it. It was very wet. I had to use some public toilets after about a K, which I won't go into detail. But it was, yeah, apart from that, very enjoyable, nice, easy little shuffle.
Onto the main event.
Brings us onto, Sunday. Onto 15 big ones.
15 big ones, eh?
15 big ones, yeah. So 15 miles, oh, that's a nice number for a long run, isn't it? It's in that wheelhouse where it feels like you're getting out for a proper long run. 12 miles, yeah, it's all right. But 15 is like, yeah, we're doing long runs again now. This is good stuff. So
solid pace as well for 15 miles.
Oh yeah, I don't really know what I was doing. So 24 and a bit K, 3:50 average for this, which is what, like 6:10 per mile pace. But I started, 4:09s, and then before I knew it, I was running 3:45s, and I had my watch covered. I was well overdressed for this run, by the way, which we'll get to in a minute, which had detrimental consequences. I
get your trousers
really
down, something like that.
No, it's worse than that. But I felt really, really, really bloody good on this run. Like, for context's sake, one of the biggest runs that I did in the marathon block was like 15 miles standard stuff, but 15 miles at marathon pace or marathon effort, which ended up averaging about 3:40, I think, for 4 to 15 miles, 24K. But that was like a big run where I had to get myself psyched up for it. I was really, really nervous for it. Whereas this was just a Sunday long run where I was just going pretty much to feel. And I was a little bit fired up from Seville Marathon. Tom Anderson, who's coached by Andy, had a really good run there off, a fairly troublesome build up with injuries and stuff like that. So I was pretty fired up from some of those results.
What did he run out of interest?
He ran 2:12, but that's off. I didn't realize, but he'd missed about 3 weeks of training and hadn't done any long runs for about 8 weeks. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, he should have run a lot. Well, he could have run a lot quicker, I think, with a better build-up.
What did he run? 2:12?
2:12, yeah.
That is insane.
Yeah, but this is the thing. He was looking for sub-2:10. I think that was the ultimate.
Not remember a couple of episodes ago, Tom told us he was nailed on for 2:09.
Yeah. that was the aim. Sub-2:10 was the aim. Like, what's the world's qualifying time? 2:09?
Maybe it's 2:08, yeah.
Yeah. So that was the ultimate goal, I think. But either way, still a good run. Very consistent splits on this, really. Like, I just locked into a groove, was up and down the canal, which is dead flat, but it's also horrifically rocky and narrow in places. So it wasn't brilliant underfoot by any means. But yeah, just really enjoyed it. So went along with it, and Andy was quite happy. I didn't get a telling off for running too fast on my long run, which I thought I would do. But there's two
running in fear the whole way.
Well, I just decided not to look at my watch, to be honest. I looked down at one split and it was like 3:49. I thought, bloody hell, that's a bit keen here. And then just tucked it away under my long sleeve and cracked on. So yeah, two bad things about this run. Number one, the canal user spatial awareness on this run. So it was half term last week, which meant the world and his wife out in the town and out down the canal with the dogs and the kids and the pushchairs and the bikes. And for some reason, the amount of people who were cycling up and down this canal who looked like they've never ridden a bike before in their life was quite alarming. And it was one of those where I would say, I'm always like as polite as I possibly can be, and will say a good, you know, 20, 30, 40 meters out, like, just coming past on your right, or can I just squeeze through? And I'll slow right down to try and get past. And the amount of people who either didn't move at all, either stopped, turned round and sort of panicked a bit and froze, or they'd be walking like all the way across, so like three people across the canal, fully blocking the path. Very narrow canal this is. And they would just sort of split down the middle. So you have to do like a little sideways maneuver through the middle of them.
End up in the canal.
I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that.
I reckon you don't handle that, though, Cal. I reckon I can imagine you just being like,
"Move!" They'd be in the canal. They'd be in the canal if it was Callum, wouldn't they?
No.
The Welsh runner that couldn't fight.
I'm polite. I'm genuinely polite, but sometimes if I go past, I do say like, "No." Do you know what I said tonight on a run? Right, I was running back, and a guy was looking at his phone, just proper staring at his phone, walking, and he'd been doing it for ages. I was getting closer and closer. And at the last second, he looked up to step out of the way. And I went, phones, they're taking over the world, and just kept running. And I didn't look back to see if he'd seen anything. But no, I'm genuinely pretty polite with that. But I must say on the canal, it's one of those things where the canal's there for everyone's use. So it's like you respect everyone the exact same. If they've got a, you know, in the same way that if it was like a mother with a pushchair, you'd make sure that she had enough room to get through.
Yeah.
Because like she's the priority in that situation. But if there's three people walking and one guy running, I'm sure they can just squeeze over. You know, it does wind me up. But there you go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm not of the illusion that I'm running down the canal, so you should move and clear the path for me. But there's certain instances where you get really nice people who will. There's a little grass verge right down the canal, which is very easy just to step up onto when you see someone coming towards you. That's what I do every time. If I see someone coming running towards me, I like dramatically get out of the way to make it very clear that I understand that you want me to move
canal
and I'm therefore moving. Exactly. But some people just literally don't even bat an eyelid. You're running towards them and it's like, I'll just fucking nearly fall in the canal, shall I?
Yeah, if yeah, I tell you what, past. If everyone ran 10K down the canal once in their life, the world would be a better place.
I wholeheartedly agree.
Let me tell you that.
Like I said, that wasn't even the worst part of this run. I was overdressed, as I mentioned earlier. I had quite thick tights on, tucked into socks with a fairly thick long sleeve, just because I'm a bit pathetic and I don't like getting cold. So if it's 10 degrees, 11 degrees, 12 degrees, I will be overdressed, basically, especially for running at this sort of pace. And if anybody, a little bit of a trigger warning, and Ben, you might want to cut this out. I had the most chronic ballsack chafe I've ever experienced
in
my life.
Tom, my mum listens to this.
I'm really sorry. What's your mum's name?
No. I'm not giving you that sort of information. I'm not going to say that on this public podcast. There's some freaks that listen to this. I know there is.
I'm really sorry, Callum's mum.
And Nan.
But I think also we've got to be transparent on this podcast. I'm sure there are people listening who have experienced the same.
Yeah, as the stats show, 90% of our listeners do have a ball sack. So
yeah, that is true.
So you're actually speaking to the masses there.
But I can't explain how bad it was. Like when I stopped
please don't
and started walking, I was waddling. Like okay. I was really in discomfort. I couldn't shower very well.
Oh my God.
And this is the worst part, right? I didn't even wear underwear for the rest of the day because it was that. I couldn't.
Oh, God.
I couldn't have
right,
that
get them
contact.
Shorts. Get them shorts
yeah,
straight
the
in
tights,
the bin.
The tights are straight in the bin. I'm never, ever, ever wearing those ever again.
Get yourself some runderwear or some Lululemon briefs.
Yeah, that would.
They're game changers.
Anyway,
well,
on
week,
that lovely
Tom.
Note, yeah, 101.
Yeah, thanks for sharing.
For the week.
No 100, 100 big ones.
100, 100 large. Yeah.
Lovely
like
stuff.
That. Good week.
All right. Shall we jump into some running news? I think as we're ticking along a little bit on the podcast, I'm conscious Callum needs to get off to bed because of his jet lag.
No, it's pancake day, mate. I've got some pancakes to scramble.
Yeah, I've got some pancakes as well. I think we'll just do a bit of running news because there's quite a lot to catch up on. And we'll leave the listeners' questions to next week or the week after. How's that sound?
100%. There's plenty of juicy stuff to talk about in the news this week, actually. So I'm keen to crack on with some results.
Yeah, let's go for it. So quickly go back to the World Cross. We've already talked about it a fair bit, but I'll just go through my notes that I've got written here. So Cal was sixth. Kiplimo took the dub. The women's race was really dramatic. Gide, the favourite, literally collapsed about 50 metres from the line. And Beatrice Chebet of Kenya steam past her. I don't know if you know, but Gide was actually disqualified as well because two blokes from the Ethiopian team just jumped over the barrier and helped her up. And obviously she got disqualified for it, which, interesting stuff.
What I hated about this, right? I know we got to whiz through this news, but I saw a video. I can't remember what outlet it was on, but there were comments from people because Gide was like looking behind her, right? And there were quite a lot of comments that were like, that's what happens when you accept defeat, or that's what happens when you look back and check where your competitors are. It's like, no, that's what happens when you absolutely empty yourself
in 35 degree heat,
which is something that the people commenting will never, ever, ever experience in their lives. Like in the World Cross Country Championships, you're winning and your body is giving up on you. So, yeah, I didn't enjoy that. It annoyed me a little bit.
And that's an example of how hard the course and the temperatures were right there for you. So just shows you.
But fair play to her. That was a special moment.
Yeah, and that was an audible gasp as well when that happened. So obviously they had like the people that were right at the finish could see it, but they had some big screens around for other people to be able to see. And we were actually over. I was getting a pizza actually at this point.
Did you ask her if she wanted a slice after it?
No. I was... The relay team, we were having a little pizza and a drink and we're watching it on the big screen. And when she fell, there was an audible gasp around me. That was extremely dramatic, and hopefully she's all right. It's a shame because she probably deserved to win that based on how she ran for 9,998 meters. It was just the final two that she ballsed up.
Unlucky. And Kiplimo, in the men's, that was a pretty impressive win from him. The top five in that race were absolutely stacked, like world records, gold medals, the lot, like everything was in that field. And for him to come out on top was pretty impressive. Cheptegei, previous winner of the World Cross Country, came third. Who was second? Can't remember now.
Ethiopian guy was second. Kamura was fourth. He's won it twice as well. But yeah, it was. I saw an interesting thing saying Cheptegei's only going to race twice between now and the World Champs outdoors. So
okay, interesting.
Just shows you how important training is. Like, just come out for a race, go back into hiding for a bit, and then just come out when needed, get a qualifying time, and then race. So
yeah. I suppose when you're at his level and you want to be breaking world records every time you race, there's no need to just go along to your national 5K and stuff and show your face. So it does make a little bit of sense.
Yeah, 100%. And they were on our flight back, actually, the Ugandan team. And we were
stopped
trying
for a Mackies, didn't they?
They did. Well, yeah. I can't actually say if Cheptegei or Kiplimo were having a Mackies because I only saw like the jackets and stuff. But we were trying to work out if the better ones were going in first class or not. So I was doing a few laps of the plane to see if I could... if I could see them, and I didn't, to be fair, so maybe they
must
were.
Have been.
Yeah.
Moving on to a bit more of the domestic scene. Well, not domestic, but over here in Britain, Great Britain, we had the indoor champs. I actually watched quite a lot of this at the weekend. It was a pretty good watch. It was on the red button, I think. Did you guys watch any of it at all?
Yeah. Well, I saw I was obviously
up in the skies.
I don't know if I was flying or if I was asleep when it was on, but I watched the replays. Yeah, some great races.
Yeah, some really good ones. The standout race for me, if you didn't watch any of it, was the women's 3K race between Hannah Nuttall and Melissa Courtney Bryan. I think Courtney Bryant was the favourite going into it. She had a little red number on a bib, which meant she was the previous winner, I think it meant, or something like that. She had.
I think it's fastest season best going in.
Right. So she was the top dog going into it. And yeah, Hannah Nuttall basically gave her a really good run for her money. The race started off fairly slowly for those girls, sort of standard. What was the name of the on athlete? Eloise, is it?
Eloise Markov. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. She sort of took the pace out. And it was all very much strung together at 2K. And then Melissa Courtney Bryan went to the front and put this huge surge in, and Hannah Nuttall sort of hung on for dear life. And then on the last lap, so with 200 meters to go, Hannah went round Melissa, and you're like, oh my god, this is going to be a big upset here. But Melissa managed to sort of just about hold her off on the last bend, and yeah, it was a really exciting race to watch.
And for context, if you're not from Britain, or if you didn't know this, the British champs is the trials for the European indoor champs. So providing you have the qualifying time, the top two in each event will be taken. So Hannah Nuttall and Melissa Courtney Bryant will both qualify for the indoors, which is in Istanbul in a couple of weeks' time. So that all the races have a little bit more riding on them than simply just being a race, which is always good to watch.
And then the other distance race at the champs was the men's 3K. And James West, is it James West? Westy, yeah, everyone knows him as Westy.
James West, yeah.
He took the win, and he made that pretty comfortable. And I was surprised to hear that it was his first ever British champs win. And he's off to the European indoors, as you just said. Looks like he signed with New Balance as well. He's wearing the pretty much full New Balance kit apart from his Tunbridge vest. But yeah, he was just in a completely different class to the rest of the athletes. I think because it went off a little bit more to his pace, he could use his sort of 1500 meter strength towards the end to just absolutely blow the field apart.
It's an interesting watch, that, actually, because I wouldn't have picked him as a favorite in the race.
No.
Like, you know, in terms of overall pedigree, Jack Rowe, I think, I'm guessing he wasn't feeling very well. He finished fourth, and then I don't know why he got disqualified, but he must have done something wrong.
He got shoved into the middle of the track, so he stepped off for maybe three or four paces, I think.
Got you. But I mean, like, you know, Jack's, you know, in a different league in terms of, you know, times and stuff like that. So just shows you that anything can happen in a race. But yeah, no, that was a good one for James West, who went to Oregon and has run some really fast times. He's run a 3:34 for 1500, 7:42 for 3K, some fast times. But has never won a British title, because it just shows you how deep it normally is. You know, you're normally going to get beaten by a Whiteman or a Jack Rowe or a Josh Kerr or whatever it is. So yeah, good on him.
Yeah, good on him. Looking forward to see how he does it at the Europeans, because he looked to be in some pretty good shape.
It'll be interesting to see who else they take as well, if anyone, because obviously people like Sam Atkin has got the British record.
Yeah.
Beat Mo Farah's time, but obviously didn't race at the champs, so will he get an auto?
Surely they've got to select him for that.
Wait, I don't know if he wants to do it. You know, a lot of people won't do it in the full indoor season, so.
Yeah, true. I think we're losing you a little bit there, Cal.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, he's back.
He's back a little bit. I didn't miss you too much, I don't think.
Am I back now?
You're back now, yeah.
Okay, nice. No.
Final other races to mention were the 1500 meters. Well, not the final races. The only ones that I was sort of more interested in, let's say, was Neil Gawley won the 1500 meters, and I've got written here, he made it look like a pile of piss. I don't think the field was too strong this year at 1500. I'm not sure how strong it usually was, but basically Neil and what's the on athlete,
George Mills.
Yeah, they ran away from the pack. I think the commentators were saying they had PBs almost 10 seconds faster than the rest of the field, and it was pretty clear after a few laps that those were the guys competing for it. But Neil Gawley looked incredibly fit in this race.
He was so fresh at the end, didn't he? That kick for
context, Gawley's run what 3:32 or something, and this final was won in 3:41, so that's like you know, it's a very tactical race for their times. And George has run 3:35, and again, you know, he ran 3:42,
he was just looking to get that second place, basically.
Exactly, because they've both run the qualifying time, so I guess when you're looking at that in terms of who's going to get selected, and you see that you're the only two on the start line with the time, you kind of think, okay, obviously we still want to race for a British title, but do we bother exerting ourselves, or do we actually look at each other and go, look, it's me v you here, buddy, but like, we're both going to be on the same team in a couple of weeks in Istanbul, so let's just, you know, have a burn up over 200. And I think that's what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And in the women's 1500 meter, Ellie Baker took the win ahead of Katie Snowden, who was, I think, again, the race favourite. I would have probably put Ellie Baker ahead of her on paper. But yeah, she ran 4:06 for a champs record, which was pretty impressive, and held Katie Snowden off on the last few laps. So that was also a really good watch. And that was the British indoor champs, really. Any other races from there to mention?
No, not particularly, I don't think. It just shows you how indoors still doesn't have the same pedigree as outdoors in terms of there's a lot of athletes that will just skip it or decide they don't want to do it because they're preparing for the outdoor champs. But
yeah.
I think indoors is so, it's not only fun to compete in, but it's so good to watch, you know, on a smaller track, far more tactics, everything's a little bit closer together. So yeah, if you do get a chance to watch some of the Europeans in a couple of weeks or whenever it is, start of March, I think, I would definitely advise you watch some.
I've never actually been to a indoor race or meet or anything like that.
Me neither.
Put that on my list for the year, I think.
You should do one. Obviously, it's getting a bit late now, but next year we should, you know, all get down and do one. Lee Valley's not too far from you, Ben.
I'd just like to go and watch it with the atmosphere. Obviously, they're only doing one lap is 200 meters. You must be so close to the action for the whole time. So,
well, I don't know if it's sold out, but next 25th of Feb. So when's that? That's this week for us recording, isn't it?
Yeah.
25th of Feb is the World Indoor Tour in Birmingham, which has got some stacked fields. Josh Kerr's coming over from America to run the 15. Laura Muir's in the 1K. Hodgkinson's doing the 800. So yeah, that's a seriously big event. I think that's Birmingham. If anyone's local and there's still some tickets available, get yourself down.
Yeah, the rest of the running news this week, we've got some world records to dive into. We had the men's 3K and the women's 400 meters, both really impressive races. Girma, the Ethiopian, took the win in the men's 3K of 7:23, which is a second faster than the previous 1998 record set by Daniel Comans, which, yeah, was a phenomenal race. And what I found even more impressive is how Bo Katir was still hanging on in that last lap.
He was right there, wasn't he? Yeah,
he broke the world record as well. But obviously the new world record stands at the new time of 7:23. But
so yeah, European record for Mo Katir. But
yeah,
will they stand forever? I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I reckon that'll get that beaten. Definitely a lot sooner than the previous record did. And,
I was actually implying it might get taken off him, but it'll probably get beaten as well. We'll see.
How you reckon it will go?
Well, I'm just saying they've popped up out of nowhere. 7:20. Absolutely rapid. There's a reason that's not being.
What you're saying, Callum, is it's juicy.
And had you ever heard?
It sounds juicy.
Had you heard of Lemaitre Girma? No. 2 years ago, had you heard of Mo Katir? Absolutely not. So I don't know. It's one of those things you've got to question these things. But fair play, absolutely rapid.
Mm.
Just something in the Spanish mountains, I reckon, for Mo Katir. It's just
who knows.
Something in the air.
And yeah, the other world record was Femke Bol broke the 41-year-old 400 meter indoor record at her national champs, and she ran 49:26, which is just, again, insane. I was wondering actually, Cal, do you reckon in over 400 meters who wins in a race? You or Femke Bol?
I think I could run 49.
48 now.
I've split 50. I've gone through the first 400 of an 800 in 51 point something. So that's with another 400 to go. So I reckon I could run a 49, but indoors, I don't know. It'd be a close race.
Definitely. But incredible record. She is absolutely flying this year.
To be honest with you, I don't think...
You never know. It depends how big the podcast gets.
Yeah, true.
If we put some big money on the table for MK Bowl, you know, a bit of pocket money to come and race Callum, I reckon she'll be up for it.
We could probably give her about, what, 15 quid at the moment?
So, no, yeah. We'll just tell her, we'll just say, look, if you win, you get 500 grand because she ain't going to win.
And, yeah, and 50% share in the podcast.
I'm only kidding. She'd probably dust me, to be honest, but we'll never know.
Never know. Any plans to do a 400 this season?
In training, yeah, but not in a race.
No, fair enough. And then some new signings as well. Callum, do you want to go through those?
Yep. A couple signings. Mohamed has officially signed with Puma. I know he's been doing a few bits and bobs with them, but that's good for him to get a contract. Always good to see someone that regularly races on the domestic scene, and he's probably known more for racing in Britain than anywhere else, getting a contract, which is fantastic. He'll probably be running the national, I would imagine, national cross this weekend. So,
oh yeah,
no doubt it'll go well there if he does run.
He won it last year, didn't he? So he'd definitely be the favourite this year, I think.
Yeah, certainly would be, unless Emil Carrez runs, in which case Emil's probably the favourite. And then the big one, which I think actually only got announced today, I was recording, is Fred Kerley, world champion 100, has left Nike and joined Asics, which
that is huge.
It's huge. I think it's huge because he's left Nike, but a lot of athletes have left Nike. I think what's more interesting is how it will affect like the economics of running, if you will, and how increasingly the top stars are being paid more like the likes of NFL and NBA and that style. Obviously they're not getting millions and millions a year, but you know, that must have taken some serious pulling power for him to move. I don't want to imagine how much he's on, but I bet it's a bloody lot.
Yeah. The guy's got 800,000 followers on Instagram as well. He's a big name out in America. So to have hit that sort of caliber in ASICS gear is going to do wonders for the brand. Be interesting to see if he comes out and gets another world championship in ASICS kit. That'd be pretty cool.
Someone's got a very good agent there, haven't they? Someone's done some unbelievably good negotiating, I think.
Definitely.
Yeah, some deal with that.
Yeah, impressive stuff. I mean, every brand's got their flagship runner, right? You know, like Skechers did it with Ed Cesarek, put all their eggs in one basket and decided, right, let's pay the big money for him. Like, you know, a lot of brands have done that. And
yeah,
when you think of Asics, you probably can't name another sprinter, can you? You can name a distance runner, but I can't think off the top of my head like a sprinter. And I also probably can't really think of a massive American name that's sponsored by Asics, unless I'm missing someone. So I guess kind of kills two birds with one stone with them, right? It's like
break into that market a little bit more.
The 100 meters is like the most mainstream event in athletics in America, so you know, which is the biggest market in the world. So it seems like an interesting play, but yeah, hopefully he performs this season, otherwise it could be a bit of a flop.
Yeah, definitely. I think we'll leave the listeners' questions there for next week. It's probably the sensible decision, considering we've all been blabbing on for nearly an hour and a half. But looking ahead, what's coming up for the week, boys? Obviously, we know what I'll be up to. But what about you guys? What's coming up in the calendar?
What are you up to, Tom?
It's a little bit of a quieter week. I've got a couple of meetings at work. So I'm in London Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Had a lovely session this morning, which we'll talk about next week. It's my daughter's birthday as well, actually, on Sunday. She's going to be 4 years old, which is fairly terrifying.
Little Barley baby.
Yeah.
4 years old.
My little Barley baby. So 4 years old on Sunday, which is going to be a bit of a wild day, I think. Got a little party lined up for her.
Ben is running themed?
Ben is running theme. No, I didn't think it would be appropriate for her.
Yeah, they're not having precision hydration in the party bags, mate.
Fair enough. Well, maybe next year.
Yeah.
I'm available.
That's it, really.
Lovely stuff. When's your next race as well? I saw on Strava you've got a little 5K coming up as well.
Yeah, I do indeed. So I'm officially signed up for Friday night under the lights 5K March 17th. Which I'm immeasurably excited about. I'm terrified, but...
What kind of time are we looking at, roughly? We can speak close to time, but just give me a gauge.
After this morning, I've got a lot more confidence. I reckon it's going to be 15. It has to be 15 something, but how far under 16, I'm not sure. I wouldn't want to say. I think 308, 309, which would give me like 15:40 something. I'd be chuffed to bits for that.
Good stuff.
Yeah, so we'll see. But then probably Bristol Track Club 5K. They've reached out, haven't they?
They have indeed,
to men of the pod.
Yeah, they've even asked for appearances from the podcast boys. So
they haven't reached out to me, boys.
Oh, they've reached out to me on behalf of you.
Well, they know I've got a bloody Instagram and an email, so they can get in touch. Let me tell you that. What am I? Ben is running his little brother. Jesus, what?
Pay the man.
Yeah, No. If you take the win, mate, you'll be going home with 600 quid. So
yeah,
or just the small matter of having to take the win to get what I bloody deserve.
No, yeah, but I'll tell you what, running 14 minutes of 5K, that's easy for you.
Yeah,
and it's
right,
my neck of the woods.
What's easier?
Well,
what's easier, putting a putting a Team Varga cap on your head or having to bush your guts over 5K. I know which one I'd rather pay the rent, let me tell you that.
That's a very good point, mate.
Shout out Team Varga.
Callum in the trenches. Callum in the trenches, dying for the sport.
Yeah, hashtag sponsored. This week, boys, I'm actually racing again, believe it or not, despite feeling like...
Go on, lad.
Yeah, which I can't really not do. It's a national cross country and it's obviously a team event. So, yeah, get out there and do my best for the team. And hopefully Cambridge can get a good top place finishing. Fingers crossed. I've got no idea who's running for the other teams and kind of how deep the fields will be. But national cross is always absolutely stacked, even if it is a bit far up north. So, it'll be an exciting race. 12K compared to the 2K that I just did in Australia. So that's going to be a shock to the system. But, just rest this week, eat plenty of good food, get plenty of sleep, and hopefully have a good run out on Saturday.
Lovely stuff. So that means next week's episode, we've got a double race recap.
How are we going to do next week? If you're in Japan, Ben.
No, yep. He's back straight away, isn't he, after the race?
I'm back on Monday, yeah.
Oh, bloody hell. Okay.
We'll work out time differences and get something sorted. But
what airline are you flying with? What airline are you flying with?
British Airways to Tokyo. Oh, and then job. I can't remember what the name of the airline is from Tokyo to Osaka. But
nice.
Yeah, be fun little 17 hours of flying there. So God knows how long that'll take to get there. But
probably 17 hours, mate.
That's the total fly time if you were listening.
Are Mizuno putting you up in first class or anything?
Oh yeah, first class. I think I'm driving the plane actually, so that'll be fun. Nice.
Oh, that'll be safe.
Yeah, definitely won't get to Japan if I'm driving. But I'm not sure really. I'm just going to go with the flow, see what happens.
Yeah. Good stuff. Nice. Well, keep us updated. Are you making just one video when you're out there, or what's going on?
There'll be a couple of YouTube videos coming up. One before the race vlog and then maybe a little cheeky one after as well. So plenty of YouTube content.
Lovely jubbly. We look
Sounds
forward
good.
To that.
Well, have a good one, boys. Ben, safe travels. Tom,
thank you very much.
Enjoy the birthday party. Don't go too crazy.
And good luck at Nationals, mate. Have a good
Thanks
one.
Thanks a lot. Cheers, boys.
All right. Lovely. See you in a bit.
Speak to you very soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.